हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So continue with the discussion on the Vaishnavas. A neophyte devotee does not serve Vaishnavas, and an advanced devotee does not think that some persons are Vaishnavas and others are not. Therefore, it is only the intermediate devotees who honor and serve Vaishnavas. An intermediate devotee must serve the three kinds of Vaishnavas. One, he who once chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. Two, he who always chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. And three, he who simply by being seen makes others chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. Thus, Vaishnavas should be served according to the degree of their advancement, whether they are a good Vaishnava, a better Vaishnava, or the best Vaishnava. No one can judge who is a good Vaishnava and who is an intermediate Vaishnava. Only an advanced Vaishnava can understand that. If an intermediate Madhyama Vaishnava tries to say this, he will commit an offense. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu hinted this in his instructions to the residents of Kulinagram. All intermediate devotees should honor that teaching more than even the Vedas. Someone may ask, what are the Vedas or Shruti? The answer is given. The Vedas are the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After speaking these words, Haridas was silent for a moment. Then the visitor from Bhadragachi said, may I ask a question? Haridas Babaji replied, as you like.
This is interesting. The Kanista is not inclined to serve Vaishnavas. The Madhyama does serve, and the Uttama doesn't see some as Vaishnavas or not. So therefore, the actual position is the Madhyama, from where one is serving. And then it says one should serve the three kinds of Vaishnavas. It means that Uttama doesn't make distinction. So for them, there may be someone's a devotee and someone's not a devotee. They don't see that because they see everybody in connection with the Lord. They see everyone as the Lord's devotee because they know that's who he is. Whether he's acting like one or not, that's another thing. So not making that distinction, therefore he's not serving Vaishnavas specifically. And the Kanista has a tendency to avoid serving Vaishnavas like that because they get too involved in whatever they're doing or they're critical or something like that. But the Madhyama then can distinguish these four. So they're the ones who are the ones who would be inclined. Therefore, it is only the intermediate devotees who honor and serve Vaishnavas. So then when it says three kinds of Vaishnavas, one who once chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. So anybody who was taken up in some way or another the Vaishnava culture. One who's always chanting, so is steadily absorbed, and one who by being seen makes others chant. So thus they should be served according to their advancement. And it says whether they are good, a better, or the best. No one can judge who is good and who is an intermediate. Only an advanced Vaishnava can understand that. And if a Madhyam tries to say this, he will commit an offense. So the Madhyam, he can tell by these certain externals what is there, by the certain activities like this. Like there's different lists of the advancement. This is one is here, is who chants the holy, it means by chanting. So one who once chants, one who always chants, and one who by seeing others chant. So that's one, that's by chanting. The others by faith. Like that. It means the faith cannot be shaken, the faith is steady, and then the faith has come to the topmost platform. and the others is knowledge of the Shastras. Like that, Kanista doesn't know so much. Madhyam knows, but still can be sometimes defeated, but not wavered. And the Uttam can't be defeated. So by these, then you can see. Otherwise, then one will commit an offense. So these are the things given, and so this is why he's saying here, is how they'll tell, because the Uttama can tell, the others can't tell. Like that. So then means the Uttama can see all three. Like that. So then the difficulty comes is then, that's why these are given as ways to judge. Because then one can see this and then know how one should deal. In other words, what would be the etiquette, what would be the service? You know, what would be the etiquette or service like that? That would be seen. If we try to take it from other angles, then who knows, one may make mistakes.
But still it's not easy. Even if you know, how can you know who's the Uttama? Because Uttamas usually they come down to the second.
Yeah, so that's why therefore that's not important. You just look at these things. These are the things you look at. Judge by these. It's just enough to know that who is senior, who's equal, who's junior, who are you once kind. But in any case, service is done to all three. Yeah. That's the point. The service is done to the Vaishnavas. So then these simple things are given because that's the platform we should work from. More than that, we may misjudge or different things. Because of our conditioning, we may make a mistake. The Uttama won't make a mistake. So basically, you can just see who, and of course, yeah, just who you respect, who you make friends with, and who you be kind to. That's basically. You know? But in any case, that kindness, and you do service that matches that. You do service for a friend, or service to someone senior. So then, yeah. Like that. So then, it says all intermediate devotees, they should honor these teachings more than even the Vedas. Yes. No, no, it's meaning that here it's giving that the Uttama doesn't make this distinction between who's Vaishnava and who's not. So therefore it's not like he's serving or not serving. He's not engaged in actively, you know, hosting and doing this. Like Sukadev Goswami is just wandering down the road. To him, everybody's devotee. He's the one that's not the devotee. So he's not even interacting with anybody on that platform. But when they come to the Madhyama platform, then they interact. So then they can, because then on the Madhyama platform they distinguish, then they could say, who's this, who's that. Like that. But acting as a Uttam, they wouldn't. You wouldn't see that they would be doing.
Sorry, because I thought I heard that you said the Uttam, distinguishes he can make the...
No, that was the point, is he was saying only the Uttam can understand. Means if...
Who is an Uttam?
Yeah, means we can understand all three levels. The Uttama can understand all three levels. The Madhyama can't. Like that. They can tell by these symptoms. Like that. But exactly what is the mood, what is the actual understanding or realization, that's another thing. Therefore the Madhyamas don't, you know, need to speculate. They just look at these symptoms and then judge accordingly. You know, like that. So, in other words, service will be there, but it's a matter of which kind of service will be there, how that service will be rendered. That's the... Is that okay? So then, the question from the visitor from Bodhogachi. Young Nityananda Das asked, Saintly Babaji, what kind of Vaishnav am I? Am I a neophyte Vaishnav or an intermediate Vaishnav? An advanced Vaishnav, I certainly am not. Saintly Haridas Babaji smiled and said, Can a person who accepts the name Nityananda Das not be an advanced Vaishnav?
our Nityananda is very merciful. Even when he is beaten, he gives love in return. How can words properly glorify a person who chants Lord Nityananda's name and becomes his servant? Nityananda Das, I would like to know truthfully what my position is. Haridas, son, tell me all about yourself. If Lord Nityananda gives me the power to say, I will tell you. Nityananda Das, I was born in a lowly family in a village on the bank of the Padmavati. I was married at a young age. I did not learn how to be wicked. When my wife died, thoughts of renunciation came to my mind. In Bodhogachi, I saw many Vaishnavas who had renounced family life. Everyone was respectful to them. Desiring to be honored like that and inspired by the temporary feeling of renunciation my wife's death brought, I accepted the garments of a Vaishnava renunciate. After some days, wickedness came into my mind. My Vaishnava friend was a very good person. Now he stays in Braj. My Vaishnava friend was a very good person. Now he stays in Braj. He gave me good advice, protected me with his good association, and kept my mind pure. Now my mind no longer wants to leave the right path. It likes to chant 100,000 holy names every day. I understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His holy name are non-different. Both are perfectly spiritual. I observe Ekadasi according to the scriptures, and I water Tulsi. When the Vaishnavas sing the holy names together, I join in the singing. I drink the nectar water that has washed the Vaishnavas' feet. I read Sri Chaitanya Mangala. I do not desire opulent food and clothing. I do not like to hear gossip. When I see how the Vaishnavas are filled with ecstatic love, I also become ecstatic and I roll in the dust that has touched their feet. In spite of all this, to a certain extent, I still desire fame. And please tell me, to what class of Vaishnava do I belong? How should I behave? Showing a little smile, Haridas Babaji said to Vaishnava Das, you say, to what class of Vaishnava? Or said to Vaishnava Das, okay. You say, to what class of Vaishnava does Nityananda Das belong? Vaishnava Das. From what I have heard, he has left the neophyte stage and has become an intermediate devotee. Haridas, I also think that. Nityananda Das. Good. From the mouth of a great soul, I now know my true position. Please give your mercy to me so I may gradually become an advanced devotee. Haridas. When you first accepted the garments of a sannyasi, you desired material fame. That inappropriate desire meant that you were still fallen. In spite of that, the mercy of the Vaishnavas brought auspiciousness to you. Nityananda Das, I still have a slight desire for fame. In my mind, I think, bewildered by the tears in my eyes and many other symptoms of ecstatic love, the people will worship me. Haridas, you should struggle to renounce those thoughts. Don't keep thoughts like that, like those. There is a danger they will diminish your devotional service. If you allow them to diminish your devotion, you will again become a neophyte devotee. Even after lust, anger, and other vices have left, the desire for fame may stubbornly stay with the Vaishnava. It does not go away very easily. A single drop of sincere love for the Lord is better than an elaborate pretense of that love. Touching the dust of Haridas Babaji's feet, Nityananda Das Babaji said, please have mercy on me. Haridas at once embraced him and made him sit down. How wonderful is the result attained by a Vaishnava's touch. Tears streamed from Nityananda Das's eyes. Taking a blade of grass between his teeth, he said, I am very fallen and lowly. I am very fallen. Haridas Babaji embraced him and wept. How wonderful it all was. Nityananda Das had attained the true goal of life. After a short time, when all the symptoms of ecstatic love had subsided, in his heart Nityananda Das accepted Sri Haridas as his spiritual master. Then Nityananda Das asked a question. So here we could, before we could see is that there was the interest in so desiring fame in that, then he took up the dress of a renunciate. But by getting the good association of his friend, then he understood this wasn't good. So now he's situated, he chants nicely the holy name, and he sees the name is non-different, that they're spiritual. He observes Kadasi properly, worships Tulsi, and he joins in the kirtan. He accepts the water that's washed the Vaishnava's feet. He's absorbed in Chaitanya Mangala. He doesn't desire opulent food or clothing, so those kind of things have gone down. He doesn't like to hear gossip. And when he's inspired when he sees the devotees absorbed in ecstatic emotion, so then he also then... But there's something is the fame aspect is still there. But we see that he's fixed in service and he's inspired in service. So these are the symptoms. So he likes to be with Vaishnavas. He appreciates the Vaishnavas. He's steady in his chanting. So these things we see he's able to take nicely. He's able to absorb himself nicely. So that would put him on the Madhyama platform. Though he's worried about this fame. So fame is a very difficult thing, and it's something that is something to be guarded against, because even in advanced stages this aspect is there. We see the gopis, they were proud that they were the most fortunate girls in the cosmic creation, because they were able to come to the rasa dance and dance with Krishna, who is the best of all persons. So that pride then displeased Krishna, so Krishna left the rasa dance like that. So even at that stage, one has to be... In other words, it hasn't come to that proper platform of prema. So then we see as here, in the uttam platform, there can still be this desire for fame if one's not careful. That's why then this principle, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnuna, Amani Namanadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. This is given right in the beginning. It means the glories of the Sankirtan mission, then understanding our position has fallen, then we can take this up. So when that's there, then we're able to respect others, not respect expect anything for ourselves. We can be humble and tolerant. So that is there. So that's before the next stages. So if that's in place, the other stages will come very quickly. If it's not in place, to that degree it's in place, we can advance. So therefore we can see right from the beginning this aspect of fame is very important. Because Krishna is, see, one may say, well, why fame? Why not lust or some other quality? But we see is that is an essential aspect of Krishna's pastimes. Is he's the Supreme Lord. But in his Braja pastimes, then there's no question of fame for being God. It's just attraction to him because he's so nice. He's famous, of course. But it's a different kind of fame. It's not fame with respect. That's the thing, is the whole aspect of respect is not what Krishna is interested in. If he wants respect, then Vaikuntha or Dwarka, these places, then there's respect, there's the taste of respect, the rasa of respect. But in Braja, that is absent. So Krishna is not respected in that way. So it's very essential for the pastimes. And we want, how are we going to be able to move with the Supreme Lord, who's the most respectful, who doesn't want respect? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's why this aspect is so important. Is fame is then it's just not an element that's there in the Braja pastimes. You know? Yes. Yeah, means the whole point is that one is taking up one's service.
like that, and in that position of one's service, then that is oneself. That's the thing, is that the living entity's self is his identity is his service to Krishna. So the essential thing, the fundamental principle of the soul is service. Then, according to the individual soul, then their service is different. There'll be a servant in Braja, in Dwarka, or in Vaikuntha, or Ayodhya. Then within those places, then they'll have more defined. You know, that's the general mood. The overall picture is servant. Then within that, then there's a general mood of whether it's an on reverence, whether it's without on reverence, or whether there's kind of a slight touch of the rules, you know, in the middle. Then within that, then there's the different rasas that are there. Then within those rasas, finer. So until it gets down to our specific service to Krishna. But it's all connected to service to Krishna. That's the identity. We don't have an identity separate from that. Because it's like we're connected with Krishna, so that's our identity. Just like, let's say, you're preparing a very big feast or a big meal. So every preparation has its identity in connection with that meal. Otherwise, its identity changes. Like if you have a sweet, then, and it's part of that meal, then it has its position as dessert. That's how it's identified. Now you take that sweet out of that meal and serve it at another time, it's just a sweet, or it's just a snack. It's not a dessert. Right? Dessert means it's after some other meal. It's the end of the meal. Like that. It's some special thing at the end of the meal. Otherwise, then it's a snack or just something to eat. Or it takes on a whole different flavor. So, therefore, that's why one's identity is always in connection with a bigger picture. Servant of Krishna how? In which realm? Under who? Like this. And then that identifies us. And then that gives us a specific focus. Like that. Does that make some sense? So the whole thing is simply his identity. So the material world means is mistaken identity. Main is that we think we're the Lord and controller. So that's how we'll view. What will I get out of this? What will I get out of that? How to, something I like or attracted to, how to catch that in some way or another. And then so that there can be enough influence on it that I can get from it what I need. Like this. So that's the mood for the material world. So it's the opposite of the servant. Therefore, in the material world, then piety, or at least the Vedic piety, even other piety, we see so much of it is underlined with the principle of service. Someone who has a good service mood is considered pious, or, you know, a nice person, a moral person, an upstanding person. So, you know, they serve their family, they serve their community, they serve their nation, or they serve humanity, or, you know, that it's all, everybody will feel it as a good quality. So that's the principle, is that service is there. So the first principle in the Vedic culture is to get us to serve on that material platform. Because at least then what's in place is the principle of service. Though we haven't identified it to the soul yet. We've connected it to our gross and subtle bodies, because our identity is there. So we're serving with that. We're serving with the gross body, and we are absorbing the mind and intelligence and senses and that in that service. But because there's still the underlying, even though it's service, but the still the root or the seed of the whole existence is controlling and enjoying. So we're serving, but we're getting something from it. Mother serves, but she's getting something from that. You know, so like many times you see later when the kids hit, you know, like teenage and they don't respond so well and they can't interface, then the mother's attention might turn elsewhere. Like that. Because there's something to gain from it. You understand? It's a subtle point. So then what it is then by philosophy, by contemplation, by practice of the devotional principles, then we start to change the consciousness, purify the heart. So, and we do those things that attract us to Krishna. So then what starts to happen is that controlling and enjoying mood starts to lessen, lessen, lessen. We start to reduce that and increase the idea of I'm servant of Krishna. So then it starts to change from there. And then externally, we carry on with the service and you know, dealing in some proper, you know, moral dealings, proper pious dealings. Because that, you know, is at least the externals are, and the mind means the gross and subtle bodies are engaged in it. But the idea is to get the consciousness to come to that platform. And when that comes to that platform, then everything starts to, then the devotional platform works.
Filled up completely.
Yeah, yeah, like that. Means the faith becomes mature. Means prema is described as mature faith. The faith is mature to the point where Krishna is everything. There's nothing else other than Krishna. Krishna, his service, his devotees, his pastimes, you know, and that's it. You know, whatever is connected with Krishna, that's what's wonderful. One has one's faith there. And otherwise, below that, there's faith in something else, in liberation, there's some faith in happiness, or some faith in something here, some position, or some wealth, or some respect, or some enjoyment, or some facility, or something that will be good, it'll make me happy, and all these. And then there's the chanting, you know, and all these other things, yes, there's that also. Or by chanting, then, you know, I'll get whatever I need. Or these kind of things. One is turning to Krishna, means turning to Krishna is better than not turning. Means the materialist who thinks he's getting everything himself, that's not very good. The devotee who turns to Krishna for his material needs, that's better. They're devotees. So they're situated within the devotional path. Though it's not the best thing to go to the Lord for. Probably gives the example, if you go to a millionaire, then ask him for 5 paisa. You know, it's like he could give you so much, but we're only asking for that. So he could fulfill the material needs, yes. So then it goes to the point, well, Krishna, I don't want, I'll just serve Krishna. Whatever, and therefore, whatever Krishna wants, that'll be taken care of. But then it goes farther, that it's just, you just want to please Krishna. And the externals are not so much important. So that will come, these just come with time. They just come with time. So the essential point is developing the mood of service. That's why you see is that service is the thing all the way down. Krishna says best thing in the Gita is to surrender to Him. Be fully, you know, surrendered. Become a uttam bhakta right on the spot. If you can't do that, then take up the pancharatra process of following the rules and regulations. Then if that can't be done, then it means if that's not fully absorbing, then we serve Krishna in various ways according to the varnashram, but according to nishkam. Like that, without material desire, but service is there. If that can't be done, then serve, but give the results to Krishna, or at least some of them. If you can't do that, then be a nice guy and open hospitals and give a charity and do all that. So service is the underlying principle. It says if you can't do that, okay, then you can be an impersonalist. You know? Like that. That's kind of, because there's no service. But it's at least, in one sense, a better position than an impious person. Like that. We've gone down that best is devotees. If you can't be that, then at least be a nice guy. And, you know, possibly you appreciate what the devotees do, so you give some money, but you yourself can't do it. And if you can't do that, at least of that, then you just do nice works. You know, do all these nice philanthropic things like that. You know? But, you know, and if you can't do that, then the impersonalist, that situation, you know, would be seen as better than someone who's sinful and who doesn't know God. Because at least then there's some form of elevation. They have, you know, they follow some kind of a Vedic process based on the scriptures. So then you could possibly change. And then from changing them, then they can move up through this quite quickly. Because most likely if you could catch the impersonalist, he would bypass the lower stages and at least start from working for Krishna, if not on the platform of sadhana bhakti. So he'd immediately go to the second or third platform, and he'd skip the fourth and fifth. Like that, because they're already detached from the world. You know, like
so in doing their day-to-day, each positive or negative. There's something to learn from that exchange. When you want to surrender to Krishna or play with Maya, it's a decision and it's ongoing every time you have an intercourse with someone.
Yeah.
So, if we embrace that, or at least try to be conscious of the negative just as much as the positive, then you actually, it's like self-realization, you actually start to cleanse the dirt and see who you are and whoops, you're like that. It's intense, but it's essential.
It's essential. If one can do it, it's good. Some people are a little wary of it because they're afraid of it. Because then the picture may not be so nice. Because generally the ego is we're always okay. Okay, we may have some faults, but then, you know, everybody has their faults or everybody has their bad day, so it's okay. So then again we situate ourselves comfortably. But to look at it and not be discouraged, then that's important. Same time as we also can't identify with it. That's another thing. As we see all those things, it's what is there, it's what we have collected for ourselves due to our polluted consciousness in the way of a conditioned nature. So the conditioned nature we have now, then we can observe it and see what is its character, what is good, what is not good about it, what's useful, what's not. You know, what's you know, closer to a proper standard, what's below the standard. But we must always remember it's not us. Because if we get too absorbed in it, then we become absorbed in a false identity. So we're contemplating a false identity. So then we just get more enwrapped. So the trick is to be able to observe it, but as a third party. Like that. But at the same time as we're connected to it, we're still conditioned to it. Therefore, we work through it, but we have to observe it from a detached point. So then we can look at it according to what is Krishna's standard. Like we may look at it and, you know, something came up and, you know, we did something nice. So then we may think, oh, that was good. But what is Krishna's standard on that? You know, what is Krishna's standard? It means naturally you do your best. But if we're proud of it, then that's not good. Or we do find that we're looking and we do something wrong, you know? Then we may say, what? But everybody else is doing it. So that's not looking at Krishna's standard. The point is Krishna's standard, it's not good. Whether the whole world does it or nobody does it, if doing it, it's not considered good. So therefore then we can keep the balance that it's not good. Even though everybody else in the community does it, still I shouldn't be doing it. Like that. So one has to... So that therefore the standard is set by Krishna. And then we see where we are on it and make a plan how to get ourselves to that standard. Like that, rather than just what's it called? Where you just intellectually say it's okay? It's a word for that.
Compromise.
No complacency? No, it's where you actually like establish, convince yourself that it's okay. Because everybody else is like that, or it's called
you.
Yeah, fooling yourself. You justify it. Yeah, justify it like that. You justify that it's okay. Yeah. So then you do these things. But the point is even if it's terrible, you look, it's not us. So then, and the holy name is so powerful, then it can be very easily uplifted. Thank you. Then it can be very easily uplifted by the process of chanting and associating with the devotees. Then we can bring ourselves up quite dynamically. But that happens when we accept where we are. Like that. So it doesn't matter. The point is it doesn't matter where we're from. Because the material world is just a shadow compared to the spiritual. So whether we're Lord Brahma or we're the lowest of the low, the distance between them compared to spiritual is not much. If we accept it, we're humble, we surrender to Krishna, surrender to the Vaishnavas, to the process of chanting, then that will be overcome very, very quickly. But if we acknowledge, yes, this is where it is, so therefore I have to work on these points, I have to be careful of these things, then it's there. So like you were saying, is that every conversation, every activity, one can observe and see what was the motive, what was behind it. I could have improved this, why this, that. But do it in such a way we don't become self-centered. Because Krishna has to be in the center of that. Then to get to Krishna, we have to overcome the conditioned nature. Therefore, we're observing. You know, rather than we just get into thinking about ourselves all the time. Is that we're thinking of ourselves compared to what Krishna says we should be doing. So am I doing it? You know, why did I do that? Why did I say that? I shouldn't have said that, or I could have said this. Yeah. So it's that's there, is that it's a, but we have to see it as that why. I could have said this because Krishna says this is what I should do. As a servant, then I should have done this. You know, as a servant I shouldn't have done that. Like that. Then slowly. The more we become aware of it, the quicker it moves. Like that. But we have to be very, very careful is that all the things that come up, we don't identify with them ourselves. Because that's what will happen when we, you know, it's just like you have a closet and it's full of all kinds of junk. And we haven't thought about that junk for years, so we're not attached to it. You know, it's like we don't even know it's there. We've forgotten about it. But then one day, then you think, hey, there's a whole bunch of, isn't there a bunch of junk in this closet? You know, and you look inside, yeah, it's full of junk. Oh, I'll throw it all out. So that's great. But you have to be very, very careful. As soon as you start pulling everything out, then all the memories start coming and, oh, this one gave me this and that one that. And I could do this with this thing. And excuse me. That with that thing. And then all the attachments start coming up. So then it becomes very, very a big problem. So one has to be very, very careful that when they come out, that we're ready to cut the attachment in us. When these come up, you know, or at least start the process of working on it. You know, to give up. It doesn't mean it'll happen overnight, but if we want to give it up, then it will go very quickly. And quickly doesn't mean that it necessarily has to happen in the next 3 seconds. You know, it just means we, if we're steady at it, then over days, weeks, months, years, then so much would just go away. So much would go. Like that.
And it took 5 years on a subtle level to even get to the touching of God.
Mm-hmm.
5 years of
Yeah, no, it's slow. But it's fine as once it starts, then it starts going quicker. But one always has to be very, very careful of not identifying with the things. That's the thing. Just see what's the nature. What does Krishna say how that nature should be engaged? How can that nature, those abilities, those interests be engaged in Krishna's service? You know, it's just like you go into a kitchen. You have to cook. So you look around and see what's there. According to what's there, then you use them in those ways. You know? Like that. You could fry with this pot, you can boil something in this pot, then you can, you know, bake something in this pot, and, you know, this spoon's good for this, that one's good for that. So it's just, and then you see like that, and that's what we have. Okay, we have this kind of intelligence, this kind of mind, this kind of senses, this kind of physical strength, this kind of stamina, this kind of health. So then I can do these services for Krishna, or those, or like this, and then one sees what it is that should be done. How Krishna likes it this way or that way. Then so it takes some time to start to separate one's consciousness from the subtle, that you can separate yourself from the mind and look at it. You know, because the mind will go on functioning, where it means eternally we have mind, but at one point after Brahma-Bhuta, then it will start to switch into no longer dealing with the spiritualized or purified material mind, but we're actually starting to deal with our natural mind, you know, the spiritual mind of our, you know, of the soul, like that. But that comes when there's that identity that I am Krishna's servant, like that. So like that, it takes time, but it doesn't mean it goes away. it's there, but sometimes it just has to be ignored. Like Lord Brahma, when we see when he was doing his creation, so many things would come into his mind sometimes, and so he'd just throw off that mental body. It says it gave up that body, because it's a whole thing. What the mind is into then immediately starts bringing the senses and creating a gross body around it. So if the mind thinks something long enough, it's going to change the whole senses and body. Means that's how we got this body, is because the mind was focused in a certain way that it develops that. So when it says he threw off the body, it means you just throw off that kind of thought, and then that goes, and then he would like that. So with time, one can start to see, one can separate. And when a mind's too weird, you just drop those things. And then mind will be busy. It's an element. That's its business, is to be busy. So then it'll start again in some other way. And then as long as it stays within reason, then it's great to work with it. But if it gets too weird, you throw it out. You know? Yeah.
I ask you.
That's okay. Huh? You started, so you can.
And as you purify, you stop being given to the people that come along and show you what you needed to know.
Mm.
So many teachers that you need us to embrace and not have the waste of time to go up and up and up and up, you know, as we always do. So, and when you look back, you actually see how special.
Yeah. It's like that in the 11th canto. One sadhu had, I think it was 22 gurus. Like that. Because as one becomes, one goes, one basically, it's like after a while, everything starts to become guru. Krishna mentions at the end, even your own body becomes, you learn things from the body, you know, birth, death, old age, disease, these. You just see that there's nothing here. So he would see the bees working, he would gain knowledge and realization from there. He would see, you know, so many, 22 different situations and different living entities in different situations. And from that, then he learned great advanced things. You know, once that kind of, that seed is there and is developing, that one is starting to be able to discriminate. So then it's true. And we see is that he had he was grateful to all of them. So like that. That's good. You want something?
Passing through different stages in the body.
Because
we are eternal. Looks like we are getting more and more attached to this idea of always being young. So when we get to the different stages of the body, passing the 40s or 50s, Srila Prabhupada said we should become more focused and the ultimate goal. Give up all the.
One has to.
And then we always think that we're still young, we still can maybe marry again, or still maybe get again into the...
Yeah.
Especially in the West, I see a lot of devotees who are reaching the 50s, and instead of becoming very serious, they are getting again married instead of...
Yeah.
Or getting again into the mood of maybe I get again into marriage life, instead of becoming really serious. So, my question, Maharaj, how... we can really detach ourselves from this concept of eternal youth. It doesn't exist, even though we are eternal.
Yeah. It means the soul never feels they're older. It means that how we feel now, we basically don't feel any different than in the mid-teens. That keeps going. Though one matures in one's understandings and one's experiences and abilities, but that youthfulness never really leaves, because that's the nature of the soul. So that's why there's always this thing trying to keep one youthful. You know, if you want to have some fun, it's difficult in many places. If you don't have any mirrors in your house, and then you go on, you'll feel in a certain way. And then when you come across a mirror occasionally, then you'll be very surprised.
Nice.
Because what's in the mirror has nothing to do with how you feel. Like that. You know? So So it's just the nature there. That's one aspect. So that's will always be there. It's natural. That's natural. But what's not natural, which is an imposition of the modes, is how one wants to do. See, it's an interesting thing. You have these... This would metaphysically explain one of the problems that devotees go through when they hit 50. See, is that... And why 50? See, is that you have 7 chakras in the body, and each one of them basically rules for 7 years. So that makes 49 years. So at 50, it starts all over again. Yeah, so it starts at the lowest chakra, right? Which is the it means it has many good qualities. If the first chakra is the basis of all the other chakras, but at the same time, is one of the aspects, elements of it, is sensuality, like that. That is an aspect, because that's where it's controlled from. So then, and then that goes up, and then the 7th chakra is dealing with liberation and all those kind of things. So then we see is that generally someone in the mid-late 40s is then thinking towards the spiritual, towards the this and that, because that's the natural thing. Then if they take it in that direction seriously, then when they hit 50s and it starts all over again, the focus will go on to the senses, but not to encourage them, but to control them. That's where Vanaprastha is at that age. Because in the Vanaprastha, he's only dealing with the senses. But he's dealing with them in a very austere way, you know, standing out in the sun, you know, and keeping fires around him, or, you know, standing in cold water up to his neck in the winter, or, you know, learning to stay outside while it's rainy and windy, you know, how much he can, and slowly, slowly increasing that until the point where they don't have to live with a house, they don't have to live with any shelter. But it's all sensual. But it's exact opposite of what, you know, the young children and the youth is doing. So it's natural the mind will go there, because that's the chakra that's kind of like organizing things. On the material platform, spiritual platform, one can always cross this and not worry about it. But that's why the mind tends to go in that way. Yeah, and then later in the 50s, then it'll get to the 2nd chakra. You know? And then it's kind of like, you know, then like that. So then... you know, by the 3rd chakra, then it's starting downward to hit your, you know, 60s, 70s, then people mellow out again, you know. But it's, that time is difficult because that's just the cycle, how the body works. The whole body, mind, the pranas, all those things. That's why it's such a critical age to take it in that way. Because otherwise it can be taken in another way. You know, it's just like you see the kids also in school. It's when they're kids up to 5, then they very much need to be in the family. Like that. It's important. They have to be very much taken care of by the parents. But then from after 5, or latest 8, within that time, then they need to be under the guidance of adults. You know, that parental ras must be there, but it should be those who are not their biological parents, because then you don't have those natural attachments. So now, because then you have to get them, you know, through that age, and when they get into the 20s, then things start to balance again, and then they're able to function, you know, on a society kind of level. They can interface, they can be an actual useful member of the community. But I've heard parents mentioning, because what we're saying is that when they're teenagers, you can't deal with them in the house anyway. Unless they're from very good families then, and from birth and like that. And, you know, so many things generationally, they've been very good. Yeah, so then you may see that there is some chance of them going through that with minimal difficulty. But for most, you know, you see, especially the Western upbringing, is that when they hit, you know, 11, it starts to go. The relationship with the mother and things. And when they hit 13, basically they're just out with their friends. They're not so interested. Mothers cook great and they wash your clothes and clean your room and do everything like that. But other than that, then they don't have much importance. Friends are more important. So I said, but it's a difficult age. So unless the teachers have the kid from a younger age, where they can develop their relationships and get that depth with them, then how are they going to get them through the teenage time? But then the answer of the parent is no, we want to keep the kid because we can enjoy, we understand this, but we can enjoy that interaction, that sweet interaction with the kid up until he's 12. So we want to keep, hold on to him until then. When he's 13 and he goes crazy, of course, we have to put him in a gurukul. Right? So that's a complete misunderstanding. You know? Because then, you know, it becomes, it's for yourself. Your own senses, your own this and that. That's what the kid's for. The kid is for my enjoyment. Rather than, it is my pleasure to take part in the process of raising a child and making them part of the community and making them a devotee in that. Means that soul is going to be, Krishna is going to make some arrangement anyway. But due to my attachments that I have, you know, that are there, then I would like to take part in that aspect of Krishna's, you know, service, his pastimes. Because he's going to raise these people in Krishna consciousness somewhere, whether it's here or some other family or another universe, wherever they need to be. So I would like to take part in that. So therefore, then you watch this and take part. But then it's on Krishna's terms rather than our own sensual. So the same is that at that time at 50, yes, there's still a little energy left, there's still a little this and that, and because the mood comes up in this, because of the condition, the modes of nature, I could enjoy for a few more years. You know, one more facelift, you know, one more, you know, a few more, what do you call it, injections, a few silicone implants, a few this, that. Something I can do to get a few more years out of it. You know? Before it's finished. Everyone knows basically 60 is finished, at least 65. You know? Like that. Though Elizabeth Taylor did pretty good. I think she got up much later, but whatever. You know, big bucks. You know? So then, very painful. I mean, my mother had acquaintances where they couldn't stop smiling. It had so many facelifts. It's just the way their face was. It could not go down. The skin had been pulled up so many times that they couldn't have a relaxed face. So therefore, they always had, because then it looks funny. It looks tight. So they always had to smile to make it look nice. You know, and it's just and after a while they get sick of being smiley. You know, they like this. So so it's just you can try to do it. So that's what the Western culture does. You know, it's like. You know, you see the men and women, they hit, you know, the women like mid-40s, the men like 50s, and it's kind of like, well, this is the last, you know, the home stretch, you know, the last little sprint you can get before, you know, you get too far gone. So then they really go for it. But it's because of this kind of thing. You know, one, it's attachment, means when something's going to be lost, then you get more attached to it. You know, same as pulling it out of the closet, you didn't care about it before, but now it's going to be thrown out. It's like, hey, wait a minute, you know? Like that, you know. So it's like that fear of loss. Then that makes the attachment more. So that's why one has to be really prepared for it, and that and know what's coming. If one goes into it in sentiment, then we may get tricked. But if we go into it in knowledge, knowing that this is what's going to happen, yes, it is going to happen like this. It's like Bhagavatam says, the forest of material enjoyment. This is what's going to happen. The grihasa is going to find themselves in this situation, or the one with adverse fruitive activities. We are going to, kids, when they're a little dinky and they talk all funny, it is cute. You know what, a little kid is not cute when they talk. You know, little 2-3-year-olds are talking all funny things, even 4-year-olds are cute. They say funny things, they do funny things, but that's going to be there. It's nice, it's attractive, it's one of the pleasant aspects of the situation. But we cannot become distracted by it. That's why it's there. Bhagavatam points out, this will come. You know, these situations will come. So therefore, then you be aware of it and see it coming. And when you see it coming, then instead of falling for it, then you understand, yes, this is what the Shastras were talking about. And then you can use that to further your advancement. It doesn't mean you don't deal with the kids and all that. It just means you deal with the kids like that because that's the way you deal with kids. Not that it's just your pleasure. You do it because this is how Krishna wants them to be taken care of. He's pleased, you'll be pleased. You know? But just like you're cooking for the deities. So now you can cook for the deities the things you want to eat, and then you just wait around for the offering and then you eat. Right? Or you can cook for the deities that to please them, and then getting that remnants, then you'll be pleased. So in either way, one will be happy. But one will be spiritual and the other will not be so much. Like that. And that can get, we can get entangled in the... So the whole thing is to understand that we will be pleased. But that's not why we're doing it. It means it's put there because the mind is in anxiety. Mind's business is to be happy. So to make the mind peaceful, we say the highest happiness is in Krishna consciousness. But that's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because it's our position. We should be serving Krishna. And because he's happy, we'll become happy. So our happiness is seeing he's happy. We're not serving Krishna so that he's pleased, so we become pleased. We're serving because he becomes pleased, because that's our position. So it's a matter of switching the things from servant to enjoyer. But in any case, even while the process is so wonderful, even while the enjoying mood is there, that it's connected to Krishna. You know, nice prasad, nice association, nice this, that, you do these things, you'll be happy. So it's there, the mind is peaceful. And then as one matures, then one sees actually what this is not what makes me happy. So that's something.
Yeah. Oh, a little realization. I don't know if it's correct. So in the beginning, the kid is with his mother and father and the family. And then the guru and the teacher make him cross the difficult bridge of poverty. And then again, the parents help him to enter into the other step of marriage life and kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And then again, he has to come out to be ready for the guru again.
Yeah.
To fulfill some seva and then with manaprastha and sannyas.
Yeah.
So this will be the right cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we want to reach 50 to be able to cross this bridge, if we want to go back, trying to enjoy again back, then it creates the problems to the whole society.
Yeah, it does. One has to take shelter of the Vaishnavas. So this pride, this fame, these are very big problems, because from fame then naturally comes all the subtle sense gratification, and if one's not careful, that turns into gross. So, you know, there's all this difficulty in the past, so many gurus fall, so many sannyasis fall, and that, but it's not them specifically, it's in general. You find so many devotees who reach that age, but it's just the others aren't prominent. You know, you could have hundreds of grihasthas, you know, running off with this one, that one, doing this, that, and it won't even hardly get a mention, like that. But one of them, then, but it's the same stock.
Yes.
You know, it's the same.
Out of 10,000.
Yeah, it's the same people. You know, it's like, you know, we're all, you know, whatever. The backgrounds aren't so great. So it's, we can see that it's the age that's dangerous. It's not the... It's not the necessarily the position. Position may add, but it's not that. It's not that. Well, we're grihasthas. But are we grihasthas?
Mm.
You know, to say they're not sannyasis, but then you'd have to be really, really confident that you can say you're once a grihastha, because grihastha means Krishna is the center. You know, so not coming to only coming to the temple once a year on Janmashtami. Then you'd have to see, is Krishna you're the center of all the things you do? Or is the house the center? And then you work Krishna in once a year. You know, these kind of things. One has to be very, very careful. One can't be too confident. That's why it says here, judging, one has to be very careful.
We cannot be general also.
We can't be general. That got Yayati into trouble. Yayati did austerity, very severe austerities. What did he do? We got one of the 1,000 years. He did austerities for like 2,000 and 1.5 years. Then he went back to heaven. I don't really remember what he did, but it was very austere, very, very severe. So at the end, 1 year he didn't talk. He didn't breathe and he didn't eat. After 2,000 years of other, you know, all the standard, you know, sitting in between the fires and doing these kind of things. I think 1,000 years he lived very austere. simple, doing all these yajnas and sacrifices and, you know, pleasing everybody and, you know, being a good host and all that. Though he would live very simply, every guest who would come and get fruits and different things from the forest and feed them. And in other words, it would be like a renounced or a detached grihastha life, but without economic development, without sense gratification. But he was doing those, so he was absorbed in the sadhana that's there in the household life all the time. All his, you know, hearing, chanting, yajnas and that, taking care of guests and these kind of things. Then, for 1,000 years, then he stopped that and he just did austerities. The standard austerities. Then for 1 year, he gave up eating, sleeping, breathing. Yeah, for 1 year. And speaking. Didn't speak either. Then for 6 months, he just stood on one leg. You know, like Prahlad was doing. Not in Prahlad, Dhruva was doing. Then after that, then he ascended heaven. So then he went all over the place. He went to the heavenly planets for 1,000 years. Then he went up to Brahma's place. You know, so I mean, to go that high means you have to be exceedingly pious. To get even to Indra's place, you have to be very pious. Most go to the moon. They don't go up to Indra's place. So then, and then he was there for, I think, 1,000 years. Then he came down to Nandankana and all these different gardens, and he enjoyed there for 1,000,000 years. Then, after that, then he bumped into, and then he came in contact with Indra. You know, he was friendly with Indra. And Indra asked him, who would you compare yourself to in the performance of austerities that, you know, you've done to be up here for so long and enjoying so much? So much facilities, you know, who would you compare yourself to? And he thought for a moment and said, there's no human, Gandharva, Deva, Asura, who can compare to the austerities I did. And then by saying that, that reduced, wow, just very general, like that, and it just reduced his pious credits down that he fell from heaven. Like that.
Cried.
Yeah. But he's still very special. So he got the blessings of Indra. He'd come down, but he'd soon come back. So most people, they fall from heaven and they're on the earth for a long time, and they'll go down and then they'll come back up, or they'll have to be here and do so many more things. But then he didn't. On his way down, then he met a bunch of kings in the higher regions, and then they asked him so many questions. He very expertly answered all their questions on religion and everything. And then they offered to give their pious activities, all of their pious activities, whatever they've done, so that he can go back to heaven. But as a Kshatriya, then he wouldn't accept them, because Kshatriyas don't accept charity. Even though heavenly is where everybody wants to go and they're being given the opportunity, didn't accept it based on religious principles. So there were 4 kings there, and all 4 kings offered like that. Even one of them said, if you don't take them, I leave them here and I'm going down to the earth. So after all this speech and 4 kings offered and Yayati didn't take it, then 5 chariots came. And so then, yeah, those kings for offering, and then Yayati for not accepting, then they all went back to the heaven.
It's all dharma.
Yeah, it's all dharma. But it's, so the principle of the generalities is very bad. That was Indra's point. You don't even know. You're speaking about people you don't even know. You don't know all the sages, all the men, all the Gandharva. Many people must have done something. What has Brahma done to become Brahma? You know, you're not Brahma. You know, you're a Kshatriya in the heavenly planets. You're not a big rishi, you're not Brihaspati, or you're not one of the Prajapati, Kunis, the Prajapatis, or you're a great personality, no doubt. But how can you make such a general statement like that? So because of that, disregarding, he said, those superior, equal, and junior to you. Even the junior to you, you're disregarding, because you're just saying a general statement.
You never want to do it like him.
Yeah, yeah. So therefore, generalization is something to be careful of. It has to be careful.
of that.
There he was saying that guard your devotional activity, because if you again become looking for fame, you're going to go back even.
No, it's difficult.
It's such a dangerous.
What you can see is if you remove faith, everything's standing on faith. So if devotees don't have faith in the movement, means if they take the movement to simply be the organizational structure of the movement as is presently manifested, then naturally, because you're dealing with material elements, there's always fault. Mm-hmm. Means every action is covered by fault, like smoke covers fire. So that, yeah, easily you can find fault. But if we do that, and by that our faith is reduced, then we reduce our position of advancement. But the thing about devotional service, unless you commit serious Vaishnava aparad, the mad elephant offense, then that advancement is not lost. It's just that you come down from it. So you can have the credit to become, you know, let's say a madhyama, or, you know, some advanced person. But because you've lost your faith, you may be down on the neophyte platform. But if you revive that faith, they won't be a neophyte then. They'll immediately go back to where they were. That's the thing. So you could have someone who could be have the advancement in devotional service to be on one level, but where they're acting at present is on a lower level. Therefore, you could have someone who's been, you know, met much time in the process, but not be very advanced because of lack of faith or lack of practice or the weeds, they allow the weeds to grow. But if you can catch those weeds, then you'll find that the creeper is big. That's the thing. That's why you see sometimes somebody goes out and gets into so much nonsense. But they were advanced and they had an offending. So that when they do take up devotional service, then they immediately go back to a very advanced position. Like that. But judging that, it says here, the Uttam can judge that. Right? Because what it is, their sincerity, this and that, that you, it's hard to see. Therefore, you go by these external things that we can see. They're regularly chanting, they're not chanting at all. By seeing them, they are one is inspired by them to chant. So, those ways you can tell, because you can see something. But what their mood is, that you don't know. That's why these things are given. How do you know the mood? You know, that's the thing. There's somebody who is externally in it, in your position, or, you know, is able to do the duties of someone that's in your position, may not be a very advanced. Someone who's, you know, washing the pots may be a very advanced devotee. Or someone who's seemingly attached to certain things, but very advanced on another side. So you get all these contradictions in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, there's standards. You know, then you follow, you associate with and follow those persons that have the standard in that, at least in that one area. You want to, for chanting, associate with those who follow the standards of chanting. You know, honoring Vishad, you associate with those persons who follow that. You know? Though they may be not good in another area. Maybe they're weaker in another area. So that's why a society is important, because then from a large group of devotees you can pick your association in which areas that you're inspired in. So that way then, by like a bee, you get a little bit from everywhere. Then you put together.
Now you give me a little realization. So ISKCON is Radha Madhava. ISKCON is the deities, ISKCON is Tulsi, is part of ISKCON. So the moment that you say, I don't have faith in ISKCON, means you don't have faith in the Bhagavad Gita that is inside ISKCON, and the deities, and the devotees, and everything.
If you ask, they'll say yes. It's just not in the managerial structure. But the point is the mission is bigger than that. This is just a one way of affecting it. You know, it's just like, sorry, we keep going back to the same ideas, but it always generally works. Cooking means if you don't have faith in the pots, that's one thing.
Like, who can cook a good meal in those pots? You know, but the point is an expert can cook a meal in anything. Someone who's not as experienced, yes, unless it's top quality utensils, then they can't get something okay.
Depends, you're regulating the fire, depends the pot.
Yeah, it means so many things. You can do so many things. Like, you know, you take the pot, it doesn't have a round bottom, you want to make a chance, how are you going to cook in it? Oh, you turn it on the edge. You know, just an expert cook will do all these things. It's an inconvenience, but they know how to do it. They know how to get what needs to be done. So therefore, you see, Prabhupada takes a motley band of, you know, hippies and other such, you know, species of life, and makes an international preaching machine out of it. He can do. So that's the whole point, is if we want to talk about, you know, things aren't any good, what did Prabhupada start with? No money, no facilities, no people, but people who did get it all. You know, he's got this kid that needs $5 to buy 1 gallon of, you know, gasoline so he can burn himself. Mm-hmm. So Prabhupada decided, you know, understood he's crazy because gasoline only costs 30 cents. Why does he need $5? You know? Like that. You know? So it's like, you know, one thing is an emotional issue. The other is he's crazy. Because, you know, you don't need that much. You know, you should have asked for 30 cents. You know? Then it's a matter of, you know, why do this, that, and it's there. But this guy, something's wrong with him because he asked for $5. You know, because. So it's, I mean, this is what Prabhupada's working with. So what we have, the facility, is so much more than what was here in those, in the good old days, in the good old days. And there's very little facility like that, very austere.
And mm-hmm. Very happy.
Yeah, they're very happy. Mm-hmm. Right. So, therefore, one has to be able to go beyond that. And whatever's the situation, you work with that. You know, you have to be practical. The same time is there's no material solution. The solutions are spiritual. Like that. Yes?
It's interesting when you read Prabhupada later, when the devotees were just in New York, and then they expanded to San Francisco. And so the New York devotees were quite straight compared to the San Francisco devotees. Mm-hmm. They were pretty wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the New York devotees were thinking, how dare they, you know, put Prabhupada in this psychedelic thing and whizzing around, and he has to... But Prabhupada actually saw that Shamasunda, his managerial abilities to engage whoever he could to introduce Krishna consciousness to San Francisco. And yet the New York devotees, pretty straight-laced, thinking, this is not good, how dare they? You know. So the shift started right from the very beginning.
Yeah.
But with a loving heart, not with a dirty heart, with a loving heart, with Prabhupada in consideration.
Hmm.
Not thinking to pull those devotees down, but actually to try and protect Prabhupada from their angle of
vision. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just their problems were West Coast hippies. Yeah, because the East Coast was more intellectual, and the West Coast was just pure sentiment. Like that, it's true. Yeah, so all these funny things have always been there. So one has to be able to see beyond that. That the mission is going on. It's like Krishna, he showed Arjuna in the universal form. He's already killed everybody. He's already won the war. He's already done what he wants to do. That's all. It's done. Now it's a matter, does Arjuna want to take part as an instrument in that? Or does Arjuna want to go out to the forest? So the same thing is, this mission is going to go on. The world's going to be saved. The golden age of Lord Chaitanya is going to be established. That's without a doubt. That's a matter of we want to be involved or not. People say, our mission's finished, it's not this, that, so many things. But it's going to go on. We want to take part, then we can be given a chance, play some role in this stuff. And if not, then we're gone. But, it's just going to happen. It's just like, it went on with Prabhupada. He had so many godbrothers. Prabhupada has 60,000 godbrothers and godsisters.
60,000.
My God.
So one did what was, you know, fully desired.
And it's amazing how actually he didn't live in the Gaudiya Math. He was not a sannyasi in the Gaudiya Math. And even though he asked for help, the Gaudiya Math himself said no. So ISKCON became so prominent by the desire Lord Chaitanya was created once by single person effort with his devotees and disciples. Mm-hmm. So that's a very incredible...
Yeah. That's why faith should always be there in the mission. Mm. You know? One may, if one has abilities in the field that he's anxious about, then, you know, whatever. He may have some opinion to try to affect something in there. But one should always understand that it has to be, you want to establish Krishna consciousness, you have to do it through Krishna consciousness. You can't establish Krishna consciousness through something mundane. You can use mundane things in Krishna consciousness, but you can't establish it by them. Like that. It means it's just like, you can use Kavi to serve Krishna, but Kavi's not going to solve the problems of a spiritual movement. He can't. What does he know about spiritual? Like that. So that's the difference, is dovetailing it or saying this is the answer, this is the solution. One can't, you know. All these different things, different managerial things, different new agey things, different this, they're none of them going to, they haven't solved anybody's life up to date. Sure, you know. They're not going to solve anybody's problems. So let alone people who are endeavoring for spiritual perfection. Like that. So the point is Krishna consciousness will do Krishna. Will move. And then some says yes, but you have to be practical and down to it. Yes, that's why the Vedas are there. Vedas are material knowledge that's perfect for dovetailing Krishna's service. Then if you can connect these things to that, then you have something. You know? Or if you can directly connect it, yes. But then you should be able to connect it all the way around. You know, they're telling us management books, yes, you should be nice to Mr. Smith, because if you're nice to him, then it will increase his production. Right? So therefore, how are ways you can be nice to Mr. Smith? Well, you ask about his family, you know, you sit down and listen if he has any problems, all that. But what of this, okay, now this makes management goes better. But what in there, what one element, even a drop of an element there is Krishna conscious? Oh, well, we want to get a good result for Krishna. Yes, but you did it by ignoring the Vaishnavas. Right? You say, no, we're increasing. Before we didn't even notice people were in the temple. We just thought that they're just, you know, different people that we send out and do this and that. They're just like things. But now, yes, but now you've understood the things with feelings. But you haven't dealt with Vaishnavas. Otherwise, why is it that you're doing this so you get more result? Well, you're supposed to do that because that's the way you deal with Vaishnavas. You get good result or not, that's up to Krishna. So therefore, it still hasn't touched Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness, already it's there. Vaishnavas are supposed to be dealt with nicely. That's just Vaishnava etiquette. That's just those who are senior have to take care of those who are junior. Those who are equal have to be friends. And there's no trust. Yeah, but then, are we trusting? You know? It's also is pointed out in his story. I think Yayati. Yeah, Yayati's instructions to his son Puru. That also Indra asked about. He asked him, what instructions did you give your son Puru when he took up the throne? Because naturally, the father will give some final instructions before he goes to the forest. So he wants to give whatever is his understandings and realizations for a lifetime. He'll naturally want to give that to his son so that he will run the kingdom nicely. So Indra asked, what were those instructions? Because that means that's the cream of all of his understanding, practice, realization, everything. So one of them, I think it's here. He was saying that someone who fears no one is not feared by anyone. Right? Someone who envies no one is not envied by anyone. Anyone who doesn't criticize others is not criticized by anyone. Right? Like,
Duryodhana, Shakuni, Karna, even though at Dushasana, they didn't have much good to say about a lot of people, but you don't hear them saying anything bad about Yudhishthira. Nothing. Bhima, Arjuna, yes. Nakula, Sahadeva. Nothing. Because Yudhishthira doesn't criticize it, so he criticized no one, so therefore they never had one. Yudhishthira wasn't the real enemy of Duryodhana. It was Arjuna. Yeah, like that. Because Yudhishthira is the one on the throne, but the one they're trying to get is Arjuna and Bhima. No one was after, even Karna wouldn't. He got into a battle with Yudhishthira, he wouldn't kill him. He could have, but he wouldn't. He said he's a Brahmin. He's not a Kshatriya. He's too good. Kshatriyas, you know, there's some, you know, some passion, some mystery, something's there, you know, some
insult.
Yeah, something is there, but Yudhishthira is completely, you know, pure.
Yeah, he never insulted them.
Yes.
Even in the council, when they were doing the playing and making his wife, amazing.
No, so that's the thing, is because he doesn't, therefore nobody does with him. So that's the principle. You don't have, no one will have it too. So if we're finding someone, everybody's political with me. There's a good chance we're political with everybody else. You know? No one's trustworthy, probably because we're not trustworthy. You know? Like that. So one has to... See, it's not that Yudhishthira is not able to tell, okay, trust this person with this work and this person not with that work. And he can tell that, but there's no maliciousness there. It's just a practical thing. You know, this person, you know, gossips too much, so you can't tell them anything. You know? And you can't engage them in certain activities. While someone else who doesn't, then they can be engaged in it. That's just practical. That's not being...
Distinction.
Yes, distinction. It's just like, you know, you ride on a bicycle and you put on a pair of shoes. You know? Like that. You can tell the difference between your shoes and the bicycle. So that's just the function of the intelligence. It's not, one doesn't have to be attached. So therefore, if one doesn't have these bad qualities, people won't deal with us like that. Yes. No, like that. The Uttamadhikaris and many times then just lessons are taught to us through them. And they're lessons that others would not be able to handle. It means we have somebody comes along and tells us, okay, you have to move from this apartment to that apartment, and then our life is a complete mess and bent out of shape, and we investigate why we have to move, and because some other devotee, then they did this and that arrangements, and then they're getting that place, and you know, and then it's like, you know, it's all, and we're so bent out of shape. Some people even leave the movement for these things. Confirmed.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. I mean, I've heard so many stories. Temple president this or that or something, you know.
One devotee leave because he didn't like his name of initiation.
Yeah. Didn't like his name. They wanted it to be Hubert or something.
Yeah.
It didn't have Esquire at the end.
Yeah.
Nityananda Das Esquire. Like that. So then, but we see is, what was Yudhishthira kicked out from? He was the crown prince when they were sent out. Then he was brought back. Then he had Hastinapura, Indraprastha, kicked out. Then he got, again, now Hastinapura, and, you know, the control of the world after, you know, Ashwamedha sacrifice. And then Krishna left, and then they just went to the forest. You know, so these kind of things, these are exemplary for us that we shouldn't be worried that we lose something or due to politics things are lost or things like that. This is just, you know, so if they can go through that, surely we can go through whatever we're going to run into. So generally those really severe things, like what Bali Maharaj went through. You go from lordship of the three worlds, and in two steps, then you're a Kshatriya who cannot keep his word.
Right? And there's nothing worse for a Kshatriya than not being able to maintain truth. They'll anything, they'll tolerate, but not that. They'll lose anything, they'll die, anything.
But dishonor.
Yes, but dishonor through not being able to tell the truth, not being able to keep, somebody asked you for something in charity and you couldn't give it and you promised it. It's just, they can't tolerate that. Not only that, okay, it's one thing if he had asked something, he felt he could give it and he couldn't. He tried, but that's, he feels bad. So for that he might go to the forest, do austerities, you know, in some way feel that he should reform himself. But here he was tricked. Little dinky guy, who knows how tall, but says that when the umbrella would move, you see this like little umbrella I have out here? That's a pretty standard size for that kind of umbrella, though there are smaller ones. But you can imagine how big someone would have to be that if they put it on their shoulder, you didn't see them. All you see is an umbrella moving. So that thing is like about this big. It means the middle. Right? So that means with the head is about that big. You know? Okay, and we get it off the ground a little bit. That big.
A deity.
Huh?
A little deity.
Yeah, well it said he's a dwarf. He's a 5-year-old.
Dwarf.
A 5-year-old may be about this big, but a dwarf 5-year-old. Yeah. So this big comes to you and says, I want 3 steps of land. 3 steps wouldn't even get across this bay.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's like, you know, 3 feet.
1 meter, yes.
Yeah. So that's it. And he says, why don't you take more than that? I can give you more. I can give you so much. I can give you villages. I can give you countries. I can give you whatever. What do you want? Then no, he said, if I can't be satisfied with 3 steps of land, I won't be satisfied with the whole universe. Which he wasn't. Right? He took the whole universe in 2 steps and he wasn't satisfied. You know? So he was tricked. And then after being tricked, then it should be understood as, okay, he said he would do it. He was tricked by the Lord. He took the whole universe. So then, okay, then that. But now he's pushing the point. You said, and because you didn't give your nonsense, so then he's arrested. So going from emperor of the universe to being arrested because he's been tricked. Who can tolerate it? But Balan Maharaj tolerated it. So therefore, then we can understand as even we're tricked, even we're this, that, then we depend upon the Lord, we surrender to the Lord, and everything becomes fine. Like that. Does that make sense?
So Haridas Thakur just tolerated.
And forgiving. Because when at the end, then he saw the constables were unhappy. They'd gone through all the markets, there's no more markets. You know? And the whole exercise of beating someone in 22 markets is that somewhere along the line they're going to die. Most people probably wouldn't make it through 22 markets, but you just say that. But he went to all 22 markets. And then, you know, and he's still alive, so they're looking very much in anxiety because if they go back, they'll be chastised and they lose a job and they'll be beaten themselves. Some calamity will happen to them. So out of forgiveness and kindness, then he went into samadhi. So then they thought he was dead. So they were very happy and then they threw him in the river. And then they went off that they'd done their job and he floated down the river in samadhi. And when he reached the other side, then he, you know, woke up, Hurigo, and went walking off. Like that. So it's just, they don't.
Shiva mentioned normally the Vanapra session was practiced in such a way as to help one become completely detached from the senses, with the objects of the senses. And in this age, these practices are not going on. Now we have the human name. Would you say that the devotees who are entering Vanapras should be focusing a little bit in this way also?
Because they're also
restrict the senses very much?
No, because the thing is
that sees the two go together. Great enjoyment goes with great restriction. And in this age, no one's enjoying themselves. Food is not that good. Service is not that good. Men and women are not that beautiful. You know, you hear about what the kings look like and the queens look like and that. I mean, you don't find here. So, and how they would eat, how they'd be served. You have somebody who has thousands of personal servants and this and that. So therefore, that they've gone so far this way, then they can balance that by going so far this way. Somebody who's hardly gone this way, then they can hardly go that. Someone who hasn't eaten a decent meal in his life, then his whole life's been in austerity. You know? So so therefore, in this age, it's just following these four-letter principles, chanting the holy names, and being absorbed in service. The main thing is to reduce sense gratification. Basically means bottom line is no sex and things connected with it. You know, the profiling, the dressing, all these things, the attitudes, and no endeavor to increase one's opulence. Whatever is there, if that's the comfortable position, because Vanaprastha steps out of it not so austere. You know, he just absorbs himself simply in sadhana. Then they go into more austerity.
Some pilgrimage.
Huh?
Some pilgrimage.
Pilgrimage, you know, things like that. So for us, that simply means that we absorb ourselves more in the hearing, chanting, associating. I mean, he's doing those five main items of devotional service. Increasing those. And just running on, you know, whatever maintenance you have. Whatever your lifestyle is at, maintain that. Don't try to increase it. Just maintain it. Keep it steady. And if one sees that one can simplify, does. If one doesn't, it's not important. The most important thing is increasing those. Because these examples are also those people who are going to the heavenly planets. So enjoyment comes when there's austerity. You know? So the greater the austerity, the greater the enjoyment. You know, you cook a meal for 2 minutes, the enjoyment's not much. You cook the meal for 3 hours, the enjoyment is more. You've been preparing for days, it's even more. So you see, the more the austerity, the more the... So that's... But the same principles apply to the devotees. These are examples of those who are performing the activities of karmakanda. Like that. So therefore, these things are important for them. But the principles are there. And because they're so gross and obvious, it means you can easily relate to them. They're given as examples. But the principle is taken, not the purpose. The purpose to go to the heavenly planets is not there. The purpose to control the senses, to elevate themselves is there. But we don't want to elevate just the heavenly planets. We want to keep going. So therefore they're saying there's a difference. Does that make sense? So that's what Prabhupada says, move to the forest of Lord Chaitanya or of Krishna, and in that forest then we'll... like that. Forest doesn't mean deep jungle, that's only for sannyasis. Vanaprastha should be in the forest that's next to a village, or in a village that's next to the forest. Because they have to be able to associate with others and interact and do all these different things.
There's a back and forth.
Yeah. It means they may live in the forest, but people can come and see them, or they're there and the forest is nearby. So that means sages and that are in the forest can come. If they're right in the big city, then they may not. You know, yes.
And it's also a time to give what you've learned.
Yes.
Back
yes.
To the society.
Yeah. That's a very important. Because if you go, to, then where will the experience come from? Also. So that's why they're available. But their purpose is reducing. Because it said, the Yayapu, the first 1,000 years, he was entertaining guests. So he was living in the forest, but he was entertaining guests. Like that. So that means plenty of people were coming to see him. The next 1,000 years, then he wasn't doing that. But at least that was the standard. So then, okay, we should...
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shri Prabhupada ki Samaveta Vastu Jindaki Hare 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 H